Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Enough of that golf, Richie. It's time to get back to the serious stuff. Northern Ireland nearly scored, by the way, their goal mat scramble. Two big opportunities. Darren Randolph, man of the match, I would say, so far. Still scoreless with 20 minutes left. But, of course, tonight's all about tattoos and Joe Allen. Joe Allen.
Yeah.
Richie. He's into chickens.
Don't say what he just said. Don't say what he just said. Don't. Even you are better than that. Don't.
I'm just throwing it out there that Joe Allen is into chickens. He appeared on the front cover of Chicken and Egg magazine.
Which came
in
first?
Spring 2016. Issue number 12.
If for the collectors out there.
In the article,
don't
inside,
say,
Joe says,
that.
We both have an interest in animal welfare. But my girlfriend Lacey, not one of the chickens,
that's terrified.
Came up with the idea to save hens.
Did you ever hear the story about your man on Animal Farm?
And I agreed it was something that would be great to do. We didn't have any hens growing up, but we wanted to help chickens after they finished their commercial lives. I'd be lying if I said I did the cleaning. As soon as it's time to clean the coops, I disappear.
We're literally talking about chickens yet.
Joe Allen is definitely the type that would have a deep, dark, secret tattoo somewhere where maybe even Lacey hasn't seen it.
Are you saying he's got a tattoo of a cock?
Possibly.
Or maybe. A hen?
Maybe.
You never know.
A special one that grew close to his heart.
He loves this.
Oh, Darren Randolph, another save.
Thank God.
What a chance.
Thank God for that.
A chance for Northern Ireland. Oh, that was a massive opportunity. One-on-one, bearing down and goal with Darren Randolph. I think it was a mistake. Ireland had possession of it, playing it around at the back. The back three, Darren Lenihan took a heavy touch. Clear through on goal, and Randolph came flying out and saved with his left boot. Darren Lenihan has been in that awkward position over the last year where he's getting into squads, he's getting to train for the week, and when they named the 23 for match day,
he gets cut.
He got a big chance tonight, starting the game in the back three. And he's made a couple of bad mistakes, and that was the worst of them. Should really be Northern Ireland in front. Darren Randolph has, without question, been the man of the match in this game, which sort of sums up the Irish performance. Plenty of analysis, well, as much as we can muster from John Giles out of this game.
God love him. We're going to have to pay him extra for this.
Of course. Well, he's going to give us all the good stuff that he gives to Dunphy, so we'll be able to work up the cash.
Take
from
that the stand.
18 minutes left between Ireland and Northern Ireland. But right now, time for the football show.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
All right, let's turn our attention to Spanish football because Santiago Solari has been confirmed as the permanent manager of Real Madrid. He's been handed the job until 2021 after overseeing four consecutive victories in all competitions. 15 goals scored since taking over from Julian Lopetegui. Andy West is on the line. Evening, Andy.
Good evening.
Was this a case that the results under Solari were so good that they had no choice but to appoint him? Or was it a case that all of the other candidates weren't interested so they had no choice but to appoint him?
I think it was a bit of both. That, yeah, they did get good results. If you look at it statistically, he's had the best start to his Real Madrid reign of any manager ever. But then you've got to take into account the opposition. One of those was Melilla, a third-tier team. Another was Victoria Pilsen. So they've had an easy run of games. So he's won them and won them with plenty of goals. But really, there wasn't anyone else viable at this time to take the job. And they ended up giving it to Solari, really because there was no one else and because he'd just about done well enough results-wise, not really performance-wise. You know, it was only really flashes of good play in any of those four games, nothing particularly convincing. But the fact that they won them all was enough to give him the job, to be able to give him the job.
As always, whenever the Real Madrid job comes up, all sorts of names are linked, from Arsene Wenger to maybe Jose Mourinho returning to Real Madrid to Roberto Martinez. But the one that seemed pretty concrete was Antonio Conte. Why in the end did that not happen?
Well, there's a couple of theories. Firstly, and I think there's truth in both of them. Firstly, the Real Madrid dressing room wasn't particularly keen on the idea of Conte, especially Sergio Ramos, the very influential captain of the team. And they do very much at Real Madrid see the job of being the manager as being a man manager first and foremost, rather than a technician or a tactician or a disciplinarian. You're a man manager who keeps everyone happy, keeps everyone pulling in the same direction. That's why Zidane was so loved. And that's why he had so much success. And obviously, Conte is not that kind of person. So they had concerns with that. So the second reason as well was that there still seems to be some unfinished business legally, financially, with Chelsea between Conte and the Chelsea board. So that complicated things. And I think those two things together, it made it harder to get him. And he made himself more difficult to get with his personality. He's abrasive, and Real Madrid don't want an abrasive manager. They keep those types in the dressing room.
Solari had a very successful playing career, spent 4 or 5 seasons with Real Madrid as a player, but this is his first big managerial job, so there's certainly an element of a punt to this. So when talks broke down with Conte, was Solari the obvious only option, or were some of those other names realistically in the mix?
There were other names in the mix if they'd been gettable, but this is a terrible time of year to try and appoint a manager when he's already in a job, trying to lure someone away. Solari, you say it's his first big managerial job. It's his first managerial job of any stature. His only other managerial role is Real Madrid's B team, which plays in front of 3,000 people, if that, in the Spanish third division. So, you know, that's not anything to prepare you for this kind of job at all. And technically, tactically, he's not in any way equipped for this job. But he is in terms of the status he has at the club, not as much as Zidane, but in terms of being a personality at the club, a figurehead, someone who people respect, someone who the players respect and can get behind. And that's fine for a short while, but when the going gets tough, as it will, and undoubtedly it does for every club, it's going to be difficult to see how Solari will deal with this with his complete lack of experience, unless he takes to it like a duck to water, which he may. You can't rule that out. But it's a huge, huge challenge for him.
Because that's the biggest surprise, it feels, with this, that they've handed him a contract to 2021. The easy and obvious thing to do would be, say, take it till the end of the season, review things from there. Was that maybe just good work on Solari's side, that he got a longer-term commitment that... I was going to say worst case scenario, but probably most likely scenario that he actually does end up leaving next summer. At least he goes with a nice little paycheck.
Yeah, and he's not going to be earning anything in the region of top coaches. Real Madrid reserve the big wages for their players. They reserve the big influence for their players. It's actually an interesting experiment, really. Can a team run itself? Is a group of players able to self-manage? Which is kind of what happened tactically, at least under Zidane, who wasn't a tactician, never pretended to be. He very much just said, okay, let you go. You go and play. I trust you to go and play. Express yourselves. And Solari, what kind of play is he going to bring to this team? What kind of strategy is he going to try to put across? We don't know yet. He's only had the experience, as I said, of a couple of years with the B team, where he's tried to be high pressing with a false nine. Now, that suits Karim Benzema, the only striker in the squad, and he is someone who has really shone in the last couple of weeks. It was about time, to be honest, but maybe he will be a player who particularly fits under Solari, and if he does, then that will really help the overall structure of the team. So we'll see. There's so many unknowns with Solari. I think it's impossible for anyone to predict with any confidence what his Real Madrid team will be like.
Right, because I was going to ask there when you say about can this team manage itself, is there not an element of that been somewhat insulting to Solari, who's been just handed possibly the biggest gig in world football? He's surely going to want to put his stamp on this team in some way.
Yeah, but very carefully, very carefully, because if he tries to do it too much, the players won't respond to that. And that is one of the things that got him the job in the first place, the fact that he's not that kind of manager. So he's more about guiding the players along, keeping everyone on the same page, gentle management of the egos of the squad, rather than coming in and telling them what to do. There's no way he'll be trying to do that.
What's his relationship like with Sergio Ramos?
Yeah, it's respectful in two ways, and that's what they expect of a Real Madrid manager, that the players will respect him, but he will also respect the players. When you talk about the respect the manager needs to be given, at Real Madrid, it's almost the other way around. The manager's expected to respect the players, and there's no question that he will attempt to put Ramos under his authority. It's not quite the other way around, but it's as much of an equal partnership as you could try to get.
Have the players lost any of the power because what's happened over the last two or three months, that when there was that gap after Zidane left, that maybe the players are able to walk around the club and, well, Zidane wasn't a master tactician for all his legendary status. You know, we ran the show here, we can continue to run the show, but actually, once he went and Lopetegui came in, it fell apart pretty quickly there. Does that mean that maybe there is a little bit more power for Solari to have some control over these personalities and egos?
Actually, I think Lopetegui did try to control them. He tried to set out a very clear way of playing. He had a very fixed idea of how he wanted the team to play tactically, and that didn't work. And I think there was no better example of that than the first half at Barcelona, where they just didn't show up at all. It was an embarrassing capitulation. But then he did try to right it at time, and they did play a lot better. But generally, the season, the few games they had under him, it just wasn't working out. And I think, if anything, that strengthens the argument that the players are better off having more freedom, more independence, than having a coach who tries to lay down too rigorously what they do tactically. And traditionally, that's always been the way at Real Madrid. There haven't been that many strong coaches like Pep Guardiola. One was Mourinho, of course, in recent years. You had one good season, really, and that was it. And then he fell foul of trying to control too much. But generally, the managers at Real Madrid, the ones who've had success, have been the ones who've given a lot of that responsibility to players, rather than the superstar coaches who have their way of playing and want to implement it.
This may sound strange, considering we're talking about a squad of Ramos and Varane and Marcelo and Bale, Benzema, Isco, some of the best players still in world football. But there isn't that outright superstar, it doesn't feel, at Real right now, who maybe you can just bulk up their ego and everything will be just fine, like you could with Cristiano Ronaldo. Looking at that group now, it almost feels like they do need a tactician. They do need somebody who can sit them down and find a formation that gets that front three playing to their potential, that actually just telling them they're great ain't going to be enough.
I think you're right, and I think we did really well. What we've been talking for about 10 minutes maybe, and we until now hadn't mentioned Cristiano Ronaldo. I think we get a medal for that.
Wonderful.
But it's absolutely the case that they're missing him. They're missing his ability to be decisive even when they're not playing well. Someone who can take half a chance and score, make half a chance for himself and score. The forwards they've got, great as they are, aren't that kind of player. Mm. And what's going to be really interesting is, and I think potentially decisive as well for their season, is whether this short-term boost that we've seen to Benzema is going to be lasting. Because he is. He's a beautiful technician. He's brilliant at linking play. And when he's scoring goals as well, he is one of the best. But that just happens so rarely. We've seen so few of those games from him in the last couple of years. If he can sustain that his improvement that he's shown in the last few games, especially the most recent one at Celta Vigo where he was fabulous, If that can become week in, week out, in the way we see from Messi, Ronaldo, these top players sustaining that level of performance, then they could still be onto something this season. But if he doesn't, then you look at, okay, now what? Who's going to win the game for you? Who you got to score the goals? Because they are light on that kind of presence in the penalty area, that kind of goal scoring that Ronaldo gave them.
Yeah, and it's been interesting watching Real this season and looking at that midfield when they play of Modric, Kroos and Casemiro, which is such a strong central midfield area that sort of just did its job over the last three or four years. Modric in particular been just exceptional. But you watch them this season and it's just slow and it's laboured and there's no real end result. And you're sort of looking at the three of them thinking, well, they're all doing the exact same thing. But maybe that's just that Ronaldo was covering up so many ills that maybe they were doing the exact same thing for the last two or three seasons, but they were just getting away with it? Or has there just been a general dip in performance from these players?
I think there has from that midfield three, and whether it's a World Cup hangover, maybe. Obviously, Toni Kroos had the huge disappointment with Germany. Modric, a very punishing World Cup with Croatia physically, and he's what, 34, I think. So, yeah, maybe it's just that they have made a slow start to the season individually. That's affected them collectively, and perhaps they'll rebound from it. But they've certainly, as a midfield unit, been below their best. And will now Solari continue with them? Will that be the way forward? Or will he bring others in like Dani Ceballos, who has made an impact at times this season? Or maybe he'll change the system altogether. Maybe just go for the double pivot with Kroos, Modric, and no place for Casemiro. Mm. We'll see. All these things, as I said a few minutes ago, there's so many unknowns. We just don't know. And I bet Solari doesn't even know. He's going to try and see how the team evolves. And that's not meant to be a criticism. If anything, it's what's needed is not to have a fixed idea of this is how we're going to play. To just let his team evolve, and hopefully he'll have enough time really between now and the knockout stages of the Champions League when they start to get really serious.
And I think everyone knew after the humiliation in the Clásico and the results of the previous month that Lopetegui had to go, that it just wasn't going to work out at Madrid. But the strange thing was, because Barcelona had been pretty inconsistent themselves at the start of the season, they weren't out of the title race by any stretch of the means, even with the feat in the Clásico. And because Barca lost at the weekend and Real have gone on this run, they're now only 4 points behind. There is a possibility that they could still win La Liga. They are still in the Champions League. They'll qualify for the knockout stages of the Champions League, you'd fully expect. Does he have to win one of those trophies to keep the job past the summer?
He's got to get close. He's got to get close and get close in style and be perceived as being unlucky not to win it. You know, if they get to the Champions League final, having played scintillating football along the way and then lose in a penalty shootout, maybe that will be enough to keep him. But yeah, they'll have to do something of that ilk, you would think, because Real Madrid does not tolerate not winning, and managers don't hang around for long. It's not a place where you can expect to stay for 2 or 3 years, especially if you're not winning.
Andy, great stuff as always.
Thank you.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
All right, they're almost done, thankfully, at the Aviva Stadium, where it is still the Republic of Ireland 0, Northern Ireland 0. They are into the final seconds of 4 minutes of injury time in front of a, well, almost deserted at this stage, Aviva Stadium. They said there was 30,000. I'd say there was a good bit less than that. The full-time whistle goes. Michael O'Neill and Martin O'Neill shake hands. John Giles joined us for the evening. Sorry about that, John.
Okay, Nathan.
How do you describe that?
Well, from our point of view, I mean, talking from the Republic's point of view, you couldn't take an awful lot from it. I thought Northern Ireland were very good. Certainly deserved to win the match, Nathan. But played well, you know, they were able to link up together, be close to each other. Because sometimes, like, if you get just reasonable players, one makes it easy for the other. And I thought Northern Ireland did that tonight. And we didn't. We made an awful lot of changes in the game. And it's hard to really sum up.
Mm.
But you couldn't say it was good to watch, and you couldn't say there was a lot to be learned from it. So it wasn't. I wouldn't take anything really positive from it from our point of view. I think Michael O'Neill had a lot more to take from the game than we did.
We might get on to Northern Ireland then and what Michael O'Neill is trying to do and the changes he's trying to implement under a bit of pressure with results not going well, but trying to play a bit more of an attractive style of football. From an Irish point of view, the team and the style and the tactics tonight seem quite similar to what we've seen over the last month and probably what will go to Denmark. Three at the back. Okay, he brought in John Egan and Daryl Lenihan and rewarded them, and they both had a difficult enough night. But you look across the midfield and the wing-backs, Coleman, Hendrick, Whelan, Brady, O'Dowda, McLean.
Mm.
Okay, Glenn Whelan's retiring, but they're experienced international players.
Yeah, you'd expect more from them.
At home. Nathan.
Yeah, you would expect more from them. I thought O'Dowda actually was our best player in the first set, certainly best midfield player. Robbie Brady's coming back from an injury, and he didn't look quite match fit, to be honest. Jeff Hendrick didn't get into the game.
like, we don't have an awful lot in midfield anyway. So, like, you'd want Hendrick playing well. You'd want Robbie Brady back to full fitness and playing as well as we know he can play. I think O'Dowd is okay. I mean, I think again, Robinson did well. I think Robinson will be a player for us. He looked lively up front. He didn't get much support, Nathan, really, in the match, which centre-forwards really need support. But whatever he had to do, or whatever he got to do, he looked okay. I think he will be a player.
Darren Randolph was man of the match. He made three or four very good saves where they were cleared through on goal. It was one-on-one, made himself big, saved his country, gets Ireland away with a draw. But they dominated possession. Northern Ireland came to Dublin and had almost two-thirds of the possession.
They were much better than us. Like, we got away with it on the night. You know, again, people said, Martin O'Neill said, well, look, we're having trying young lads on as a game. We weren't beaten. But I wouldn't have taken an awful lot of positives from that game. Again, I don't mean to repeat myself now. I think Northern Ireland and Michael O'Neill had a lot more to take from the game, more encouragement. They played as a team. They made a lot of changes as well. But there was always somebody supporting the ball. There was always somebody getting on the ball. We looked straggly, you know, like you come to...
And how are they doing that? Because a lot of people will have seen and remember Northern Ireland at Euro 2016, where they achieved some brilliant results, were, I don't want to say very negative, but were very much built on a solid defensive structure, not conceding goals. It wasn't exciting to watch at all. Whereas watching them over the couple of games in the Nations League so far, watching them tonight, it seems as though they've made a conscious decision of, actually, if we want to achieve something now, we need to be able to hold on to possession, we need to be able to keep the ball in midfield. How have they done that?
Well, that's the influence of the manager. Obviously, the manager has to influence everything. So I'd say there's no doubt having established what he established in the team would be to get more, a little bit more creativity into it. And you see, I think when the team is encouraged to support each other, again, I said before at the kickoff, you know, in football, you only get into trouble when you have nobody to give the ball to. So if you get the players playing and getting into position to receive the ball, they don't have to be great players, Nathan. You know, if you only have to pass the ball 10 or 12 yards to a colleague, that's what you do. But that doesn't happen overnight. That doesn't happen by accident. They're encouraged to get close to each other, to get near each other, to hold the ball and do all the various things that they did. You know, we're still straggly, I would call it.
Yeah, and that was noticeable as well tonight. And that's been a constant trait, probably maybe over a decade, but certainly over the last 3 or 4 years and the last 12 months when results have been particularly poor. Bad, bad errors when players are in possession of the ball in and around midfield. And that happened again. Two or three of Northern Ireland's chances came tonight when Robbie Brady had the ball in midfield. There was nobody really near him, no great pressure, but also probably didn't have any options. He turned back, he went for a ball back to a centre half, left it slightly short, and well, they get in.
There's no excuse for that, Nathan. That's just bad play. So whether there's somebody supporting him or not, you don't give the ball away the way we did. And the second half, the same. When we let them through, that is bad play, and actually there's nothing the manager can do about that. I mean, there's other forms of play, the general play, where you can support each other, which Northern Ireland did, somebody to give it to. But when you see mistakes, bad mistakes like that, you can't legislate for that. That's just bad play that the players shouldn't do. They shouldn't be caught in possession like that. So that's they call it individual errors now. Well, everything on a pitch is individual errors.
But our players seem to make more individual errors in an Ireland team than they do when they're playing with their club team.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, you can't put that down to the manager.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's bad play. And maybe on playing in the club team, Nathan, we don't see as much of them as we do playing for the Irish team. But, like, bad play is bad play. Bad mistakes. I mean, like, the best manager in the world couldn't get Brady to do what he did or not do what he did on the night. That's up to the individual players to do that.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the best side of it, Nathan, here. You know?
I was going to say, the problem is we seem to be having the same conversation. It's not getting...
No, we haven't played
well. It's not getting any better.
No, we haven't. And tonight was a bit of a practice match. There's no doubt it was a non-competitive match. But you'd still look for something to be happening in the team, you know, something better to be happening in the team. So,
do you respond? Martin O'Neill's in a difficult position because there's not the depth that was previously there. He's looking around on the bench and there's players who aren't even playing Premier League football, who aren't playing Championship football. He's having to look tonight, Ronan Curtis coming off the bench, playing his club football with Portsmouth at the moment. And it's hard then when Jeff Hendrick, say, isn't performing in an Ireland jersey, say to drop him and say, what you're doing isn't good enough.
Yeah, well, he hasn't played well for Ireland for a while. But if you look at the Northern Ireland team tonight, there was no outstanding stars for them, Nathan. But as a unit, they were better. You know, so it means that you'd have to say, well, they're better organised than we were and have been. Like tonight is a different match because a lot of changes made in the game. They made a few changes as well. But there's no doubt that the way they have played in recent times, Northern Ireland, with similar resources to us.
Well, lesser resources, arguably.
They have played as a team better than we have played. There's no doubt about it.
We've had Michael O'Neill on the show on a couple of occasions and spoken to him about the structure that they seem to have and the organisational levels. And listen, every manager is different, and Martin O'Neill can point to his record and say he's had a more successful career than Michael O'Neill has. But what O'Neill does, he comes in on Monday and he more or less names his team on the Monday because he feels, I don't have a huge amount of training sessions. These are my 11. Mm. Okay, some players are going to be unhappy with that and they're there for the week, but suck it up, train well, maybe get in next time. Yeah. But these are my 11 and we are going to spend the entire week testing these 11 in their positions so that when they go on the pitch, everybody knows exactly what's happening.
Well,
it sounds like it's the complete opposite to what Martin O'Neill is doing.
Well, I understand what you're saying, but what can happen, everybody knows what's going to happen in the training session. You don't actually know what's going to happen on a Saturday, but you can be organised. You can be organised on the basic things. And what I noticed with Northern Ireland tonight, for the corner kicks, all the basic stuff you can have. Free kicks for, free kicks against, throw-ins for, throw-ins against. Right? If you go back over a period of time, say with the Irish team, Scotland, remember a couple of years ago?
Short corner
did us. Denmark, in last year, did us on a short corner. That should never happen. In other words, when you're managing, my take on managing a team, you do everything that they shouldn't do. Mm. You know, in other words, we get a corner kick, we never allow them to take a short corner. And when we get a corner kick, we want to take advantage of them. And that's like a turnover in rugby. Because why can't we score up in a short corner and we don't let them show up in a short corner? Throw-ins, for example. I noticed with the Irish team playing, every throw-in is a long throw and down the line.
That takes a minute to take when James McLean picks it up, but he's not allowed to take the throw-ins. He has to wait for the fullback to come.
That's a basic. That's how you get a tempo going. Quick, free kick. Get a ball down quickly. Mm. Nearest on the ball, get a go. That sets a tempo. That's only common sense. Corner kicks, you get two out on it straight away, automatically. If it's not on, then it's not on, right? If it is on, then you take advantage of the opposition. That's a tempo in what they do. I mean, and I think we were talking in the Wales match when we were beaten 4-1. We got a free kick in the first 5 minutes of the match. I think it was 35, 40 yards from our goal. And everybody put it down, went up the pitch and waited for Randolph to come out and take it. Now, that tells you something straight away. It tells you that the players are not being encouraged to get it down and get their playing. That's a tempo, particularly when you're playing at home. You know, when you say, well, you're playing at home, quick throw in, get it down, get free kicks, get on it, corner kicks, smartness, being alive all the time. You know, that's what sets the tempo. Now, there's no doubt Northern Ireland are better at us than that. And that's nothing to do with the players' ability. That's getting organised, getting to do it. And you say Michael O'Neill, when he's with the North, he gets the 11 players to play. But when you have to do with that, Nathan, as well, that you have a bigger squad of 18 players, but you include them, the lads, say a fullback, say there's Christie and there's Doherty. Yeah. Now, if you're doing something with Christie, you have to be doing it with Doherty. In other words, Doherty has to know.
So that's when needed.
So that's preparation. So, like you said, Michael O'Neill gets the 11 that he's going to play. I agree with that. And you work with them. But while you're doing that, you have the centre-backs that's not playing, the full-backs that's not playing, the midfield players, and you tell them, if you watch what we're doing here or see what we're doing here, that's what you do when you come into the team. You can't isolate the guys
who aren't involved
on that particular morning. And because I think it's right to get the players in that's going to play.
Yeah.
You have to be careful a little bit on that, in that when it comes near the Friday night. But if you've done it all week, but that's the team and everybody accepts it. But what I was always worried about was naming the team too early, that somebody goes down with the flu or something overnight, Nathan. But there again, the lads that are coming in have been doing what the first choices were doing anyway. So it's
Martin O'Neill will counter that and go, by naming the team an hour beforehand, it doesn't matter if somebody comes down with the flu the night before, because, haven't selected your team anyways.
But if we believe that's what he does, well, I can't understand that. Right, because I mean, some of the drastic things we've heard over the years, McGeady, one of the matches, the first time he knew he was playing middle and midfield was, but that's non-preparation. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. All right. We need to take a quick break.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Welcome back. We're almost done, but we have a text in, John. What's the worst match you've ever seen?
Oh, the worst match I've ever seen. Well, it wasn't tonight. I have seen worse, but I can't actually remember the worst match I've seen then. It certainly wasn't good tonight. Actually, it was the match I played, the first match we were talking about before the program. It was as bad as that was. So I've been involved in one or two very bad ones as well, Nathan.
Now, you've been very good with your time all evening, John, and I don't want to upset you just before you leave, but we spent a lot of time talking about Luka Modric, and we know of your love for Luka Modric. While this Ireland game was going on, there was a proper competitive Nations League game going on between Croatia and Spain, two of the most technically gifted sides around. Finished 3-2 to Croatia, all the goals in the second half. Mm. We maybe should have watched that game.
Well, we wouldn't have had as much interest in it, Nathan. I think for enjoyment.
Yes, for pleasure, John, for actual entertainment of a Thursday evening.
Yeah.
But we like to suffer.
Yeah. Well, that would have been a great game to watch, all right, especially if you were a Croatian person, because they came back and they won well against the Spanish team. But, you know, we are what we are, and fingers crossed it'll get a bit better.
We are what we are, and fingers crossed. Yeah. That's where Irish football has got to right now. John, great stuff as always. Thanks a million for coming
Thanks,
in
Nathan.
This evening.
Thank
Pleasure
you.
To have you. That is all about time, all we have time for. But earlier we asked you to identify our mystery voice. It was, of course...
Didn't never get old.
Hordrick Harrington. Congratulations to Andrew Culhane, who wins an Ireland Limited Edition Series jersey and also goes into that all-important end-of-week draw to win a pair of tickets to see Ireland against New Zealand this Saturday. It's all with thanks to Volkswagen, a proud sponsor of Irish rugby. Back on air tomorrow morning, 7:45 a.m. OTBM, live as ever on all our social channels. And tomorrow night, we will have Brian O'Driscoll in studio and also Friday Night Racing with John Duggan and Johnny Ward. Loads of other good stuff as well. Well, Richie is in for Tom Dunn again tonight. That's up next. We'll talk to you then. Good luck.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.